There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second segment of the show. This is podcast number 316, November 20th, 2008. Steven?
This edition of F1 Weekly is brought to you by the all-new 2009 Motorsports Memories powered by Turbo Calendar, a pictorial tribute to the rage and age of the Turbo era. Incredible images in large format featuring BMW-powered Branham of Nelson Piquet, the Siegfriedo-sponsored Tolman Turbo of Ayrton Senna, Porsche-powered McLaren of Niki Lauda, and many more. Now available on the F1 Weekly merchandise page. Get one, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. And of course, we always thank Motorsports Memories. And there you go on today's program. Testing in Barcelona. Rubens Barrichello hints at a tell-all book. Takuma Sato still has it in him. And a warm welcome for Bruno Senna by everyone in the paddock. And of course, we have a special interview with Jessica Branham. Motorsports Mondial with the King, and a goodie bag from Macau. Steven, welcome to the program. How are you today?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm absolutely wonderful. I've got more time on my hands than I could possibly choose from. But nevertheless, it's great. It's the off season, and of course, everybody's watching testing. And like I mentioned, testing in Barcelona, a lot of good stuff happening, and I find it very fascinating. Of course, I'm going to talk about my brethren, Sebastian Loeb. Now, hey, he's a rally driver. He says he's not, you know, he's not taking this seriously. He did shake down the car in Silverstone because you got to get, I mean, there's a steering wheel with 1,400 little doohickeys. You know, it's like getting one of those phase linear stereos well, from 1974.
That, and it only has two sides to it. He's just the one that's full circle.
Yeah, so... but anyway, he was eighth in the timesheets on the first day of testing, and he impressed everyone, including himself. Now, it's funny because he left the following day because he wasn't very serious, but he still enjoyed it, and he admitted that this is a much more physical game than it is in rallying because of the G-forces left and right. But still, all in all, I thought I was very impressed with Loeb doing an outstanding job. Your thoughts on that, Steven?
He ought to be able to drive an F1 car reasonably fast. He does have amazing car control skills being a rally driver. I would think for him it would be almost boring because it's the same circle every time, whereas with rally, it's a different run every time you go out. But I'm not surprised that he didn't have a problem. I would expect the G-forces to be a little bit more pronounced in an F1 car versus a rally car. The rally car is more of bump and grind rather than lean and turn.
Well, what they did to make them feel good and familiar was they drew little forest trees, little pine trees on his visor. So it looked like he was in a rally car.
Well, I thought they were just giving him a little bit bigger windshield.
Exactly. And I thought the story of the day also was Sebastian Vettel takes the Renault-powered Red Bull and goes right to the timesheets almost every day. I mean, the kid's got it, and I think he's going to be more of a problem for the other drivers. In other words, cage-rattling, I believe.
It's the term season that we like to use.
Exactly.
I'm not surprised. You know, Adrian Newey with the new car, the Renault power plant we know is a good, solid power plant. And the kid's quick. That's all there is to it. He's quick.
Exactly. No, he was quick. All the Toro Rosso's were quick. Even today was Bourdais second in the Toro Rosso, Vettel first in the Red Bull, and of course Buemi. It was top three were Sebastian. It's too bad Loeb didn't stick around for a couple of more days.
For another day.
I mean, I don't think we've had that many Sebastians on a test in 15 years. Nass, welcome to the studio. I know you're huffing and puffing, running in here out of the rat race, of course, of Northern California. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Hello to everybody. And I thank Mr. Fab again for this tea waiting on arrival.
Exactly. The service here at the new studios, we've expanded and now we're bigger and better with not only three flagpoles, but four right out front.
Yeah, and the in-flight tea is very good.
Exactly. And we're working on that in-flight burrito, which is coming up next week.
Let's see if we get to hear that.
Exactly. So your thoughts on testing, a lot of good stuff. I mean, my favorite part is when Robert Kubica said, yes, we do have the ugliest car. because BMW came out with a pretty close facsimile with the B-spec, with the new front nose, the small rear wing. And it does look a little bit awkward at first, but I think we're going to get used to this real quickly.
Si, senor. But going back to the Sebastian situation, Sebastian Loeb, your man, it was good to see him in a Formula One car. He was very competitive. And I like his statement that the, you know, rally drivers are always slipping and sliding. And he said about a Formula One car that the grip is incredible. And I said, man, coming this from a rally driver, you know, multiple world champion, that says something about Grand Prix cars.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm sure he had a great time.
Yeah.
And I was glad Red Bull provided this. And it showed that Sebastian Loeb, if he really wanted to, can make the transition. A great driver is a great driver, period.
Yeah, talent is talent, you know. And he was second at Le Mans, I believe, right?
Correct. And that's actually, he goes now to test the Peugeot in preparations for Le Mans. I'm pretty sure he's going to be doing that.
Well, he's part of the family anyway.
Exactly.
PSS, you know, Peugeot, Citroën.
Yeah.
Citroën, as you call it. But, you know, the other day I was going to tell you something I forgot, and of course this is of interest to you. I believe it was the A1 GP race, which was in China a few weeks ago, and I watched it on the web, and there were some pictures, still images, and I think it was the driver parade, and guess which car was at the front?
A Citroën?
Yeah.
Machismo!
Your beautiful Traction Avant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, if you go on their website and you click on the images, you will see, I said, uh-oh, where is Clark Rogers when you need him in Kowloon?
Well, hey, me and you have driven to San Francisco in a Traction Avant a few times.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a lot of laughs.
Half of San Francisco was speaking French to him that day.
So anyway, let's get back to Barcelona and talk about testing again. So BMW looking pretty good. Nick Heidfeld was very happy, with the, I mean, of course, there's so many changes in the car from the slicks to the setup. And, of course, many of them are testing the KERS. Of course, the Kinetic Energy Recovery System. And
as we call it.
Yes. And nobody.
At Weekly, the lightning box.
Yeah. Well, nobody's had too many complaints. I'm a little disappointed that more teams aren't coming out with the larger front wing because Renault or Red Bull still have pretty much a fundamentally 2008 car. But I was really surprised to see how far back Ferrari was.
Yeah, but this is preseason testing.
I know, but we've got to have something to talk about, Nasser. And if I'm going to criticize anybody, los italianos.
Oh, yeah? Well, we'll see. But, you know, the Sebastian Vettel situation is interesting. I saw that. I said, well, I'm surprised that right away, Red Bull Renault is on top. But then I said, well, look who's at the wheel. So
exactly.
This kid is going places. I think there will be a bidding war for his services in a year or two.
Yeah, I think he might be at Renault in a couple of years. Yeah.
No, I think if any place, he will end up at Ferrari.
But everybody ends up at Ferrari.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are saying that Lewis Hamilton's going to end up at Ferrari.
No, we'll see. But
Lewis says he's a McLaren lifer.
Yeah, but they say that at the beginning.
Yeah, and the thing is, Sebastian Vettel apparently has a 3-year contract with remaining with Red Bull. So we'll see, but this kid is going places.
Yeah,
so I would love to see him and Hamilton as teammates.
But you just, that's because you're
but you
a
like
cage,
to watch Forrest fight.
Yeah, you're a cage rattling kind of a guy.
Hey, find out how good you are. I'm not saying one is going to be better than the other, but nothing like two angry cheetahs in one cage.
No, but 2009 I think is going to be very intriguing with the new cars, with the Vettels, with the Alonzos and the Hamiltons in new cars, because it's really going to shake up.
Oh,
and of course, we're all hoping, and of course it came out in the press today, that Kimi Raikkonen admittedly said he had a hard time finding a motivation.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, you know, in 2007 I wanted to see him win, and reason was that I thought he was a very deserving, he's a very quick driver.
Absolutely.
There's no question about that. But, you know, I have a feeling that's like, you know, to get to Formula One, the desire, the intensity, commitment it takes, once you lose that, I don't think you're going to get that dedication back. And I would not put my, I mean, unless he's really hungry now, but then again, you know, he's the highest paid driver in Grand Prix history, so I find it hard that he will find some motivation. Get back to the Raikkonen I knew when he was at McLaren. That I have not seen except for his very first race with Ferrari. And that's very disappointing as a racing fan.
And it is disappointing because, I mean, as an Alonso fan, as everybody knows, the one thing I like about him is, you know what? Okay, he might be doing goofy things in Hungary or you know, the car's stinko. But once he gets in the car, he does leave all that behind. And it's him in the car and putting in a good performance.
Well, you know, it's exactly what you have said is what people like Alan Henry say, that why would somebody with such mega talent at such a young age would resort to, you know, the stuff that goes on. But, you know, that's hopefully is getting all behind now. Him and Hamilton have hugged and, you know.
They're hugging and kissing now.
Yeah, I know.
I like it when they're fighting and yelling.
Yeah, but I think next season, you know, scenery will be pretty much the same. It will be Ferrari, McLaren, probably Renault. But if there's one kid who's going to break through, I'm convinced it's going to be Sebastian Vettel.
Also known as because I think if Adrian Newey, we know he makes a good chassis. Aerodynamics are going to be good, even though that's been downgraded in significance. But with the upgrade of slick tires, I think Vettel will be challenging in the top five.
I don't expect much from Toyota or Honda, frankly.
I don't either, and once again, Toyota will be struggling because we're used to it, and it's not all the money that they put in there, but still, I think Timo Glock has done a great job, and it shows that youth and talent is definitely a good thing to have. Yarno truly is very talented, but he's getting long in the tooth, so we'll see what happens. At least Honda, they still have some big decisions to make on driver choice. I mean, Rubens has got to go.
I agree. If Honda wants to move forward, unless they want to take another year to kind of get things together, but Ross Brawn's already been there for a year and a half. It's time to move on. They need some young gun who can put on some good laps, who can make the team feel competitive. You've got basically Button and Rubens Barrichello, who basically are complacent. Button would like to win more, but he's happy. You know, he wasn't nearly as vocal this year about the quality of the car as he was the year before. So he's starting. It's almost like he's giving up.
You get desensitized.
I've whined enough. Nothing's happening. I look like a whiner, so I'm just going to shut my trap.
And Senna looked good. He was a little bit faster than Degrassi. The Senna name and Honda are really synonymous in terms of Formula One fans. I think that's a recipe you can't go wrong with in terms of sales, marketing.
That combination will completely sell out two or three Japanese Grand Prix in a year.
Exactly. And speaking of Japanese Grand Prix, let's go back to Toro Rosso real quickly. Even though I thought the Honda did look pretty good, They had the new wing on the front, and I'm starting to like that front wing. The more I look at the pictures, even though it's a little out of scale with the rest of the car, I think once we keep looking at it, I'm going to like it. But quickly getting back to Toro Rosso, Takuma Sato, hoping to get a seat. I don't know. You know, he's been around for a long time. I mean, is it fathomable that he'll be back in Formula One next year?
Well, his times were pretty impressive.
And they were pretty impressive.
I don't know what the... I heard that Red Bull is looking at him because they want to expand their market share in Japan. Or maybe Honda is putting a lot of money for him. I don't know what is powering his agenda here, but he was very quick. I mean, for somebody who has been out of Formula One for a while, those were very impressive times. And the guy who's really on shaky ground, hate to say, is Sebastian Bourdais.
Well, Sebastian Bourdais still looked pretty good.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's not just being quick.
Yeah,
like you said,
there's a lot of marketing.
It's a bigger package that you have to look at with each driver.
Yeah, and you know this kid, Sebastian Buemi, he is a Red Bull driver, so they would like to, you know, bring their own. But I hope they give Bourdais one more shot, you know.
Give him another year at least. What would make sense to me would be maybe to bring in Sato, get that market share you want, and let Buemi spend another season seasoning.
As a test driver, yeah.
Yeah, test driver and let him run GP2 so he gets more familiar with the tracks in Europe.
And Buemi is a very good racer, and he's very young. But, you know, he was beaten soundly by Romain Grosjean in F3 Euro Series last year. And this year, he did win a race, but, I mean, he was nowhere near Romain Grosjean as a, you know, direct competitor.
Yeah, I think he definitely needs more seasoning before they... I think it would be premature to put him in the F1 car full-time at this point.
I agree. Okay, let's quickly jump to the back of the line and talk about one of my favorite teams, Forza India. Bravo, Fisichella. Those days are over.
Force India Mercedes?
Yeah, Force India Mercedes now. More than just Mercedes, we're talking Force India / McLaren. And of course, I knew this was going to happen. Pedro de la Rosa gets called to do testing. Some people are saying that Ron Dennis has promised Pedro de la Rosa for his last year in Formula One that he will be back in a race seat if he can make it happen. Because Pedro, even though he's old, he's a good driver. And he's shown so much loyalty. And, you know, Ron, he gets really sensitive about this stuff. He gets teary-eyed.
But wasn't he kind of a little bit under the table there with the sharing text messages with Fernando?
And yeah, but that's because they're Spanish. Espanol, and text messaging is still cool.
Well, that's how he got the drive. Martin Whitmar's apparently text message... Vijay Mallya.
Exactly. These guys all have...
All about the text messages.
Yeah, but, you know, I won't be surprised if we... You know, it's very possible that we see... I mean, nobody's talked about Gary Paffett, but Gary Paffett's a pretty good driver. He's had some success when he was young, and he would be fine at Force India. And Adrian Sutil came out today saying, well, I have a contract in 2009. Dude, how many times have we heard this in Formula
and
One?
It comes down to this, dude. You have a contract, which means you'll get paid. That's all it means.
Exactly. So, I don't know. We could see a whole new lineup, and Vijay said it himself. He will listen to advice from McLaren, including driver choices. Nasser?
Well, you know, Ron Dennis, you're saying, is reported that he has promised him. F1 Weekly would like to bestow a title on Pedro de la Rosa also. Muy macho hombre de data exchange.
Exactly. I agree. Because he was one data exchanger indeed.
And he's 37 years old. I'll be surprised if they give him the ride. I'll be surprised.
Yeah, especially when Rubens is going to be looking for a seat.
Yeah.
You never know.
Paul Di Resta, I can believe, because he's a young kid. He's been with Mercedes for a while. And again, age is an issue also, you know. So we'll see.
And I'm really surprised that I have seen no word about the Vitantonio Liuzzi, his plans for 2009. He is really staying under the radar, which could be a smart thing. You know, he knows what's going on at Force India. And I think he should have a shot. And Fisichella and Rubens Barrichello should open up a Pizza Hut franchise, like, right outside of Barcelona and just give it up.
Well, I think both of them, you know, if you want to continue to race, move over to something like DTM. Or British touring cars, or come on over the pond and start racing in NASCAR with all the other old guys.
Yes.
You know?
No, but, well, hey.
Talking of NASCAR, have you seen Juan Pablo Montoya lately?
He's getting a little.
He's beginning to look like a NASCAR driver now, too.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for him to do
that. You're talking old school NASCAR driver.
Yeah, he's ready to do Doritos commercials and stuff.
Taco Bell.
Well,
maybe he's trying to get a new sponsorship.
Well, let's not forget that he also has the Good Life, and those are big cars. You know, your weight's really not that significant, not like in Formula One. And they don't have to deal with the KERS device yet.
No, I don't even think they weigh those cars.
I think they do, but it's in the 3,500-pound range. It's a monster.
It's called Pig.
It's huge. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping that Force India, you know, and I don't want to be mean. Like you said, we love all Formula One drivers, but reality is reality. And I don't think Giancarlo Fisichella is going to be there next year, honestly.
Adrian Sutil is saying that he's very confident he has
he
a
said
contract.
That.
Yeah. And so is the his manager, Mr. Zimmerman. Hans Zimmerman!
Yeah.
We have a contract.
But again, having the. I don't know if these guys understand this. Unless you're a top flight driver like somebody like Fernando, who can write, have I will be in the race seat written into the contract means that they're going to pay you next year, and that's about it.
No, he had that written at another team.
It's written in my contract.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there you have it. Okay, real quickly before we go to break, I want to bring up one more highly talented individual, of course, that's Nico Rosberg with the Williams Toyota. He has put it out now that if you guys don't pick up the pace, I'm out of there in 1 year. 2009 is my last year, and he's basically saying it to Frank because, you know, he once again has shown his loyalty like Pedro de la Rosa, and in the end, it's bit him in the derriere. And now he's saying, you know, if this car doesn't work, I'm out of there. But I find that interesting because where is Nico going to go?
Well, you know, I told you before a few weeks ago how you decipher loyalty in motor racing in this day and age. Lack of better opportunities elsewhere is called loyalty. And the question, where will he go? Ferrari is already signed up for 2010. McLaren is Lewis Hamilton's, you know.
Beehive. Anybody who goes to McLaren, you better be ready to rattle cages or be number two.
You have the only, like I've said before, the only guy who can rattle Hamilton's cage is Sebastian Vettel.
He's the only guy that we've seen on the grid right now that can do
it. Exactly. It takes a certain special talent, you know, and not everybody can rattle everybody's cage.
Yeah, and the problem with Nico being in the slow car is that his edge is been blunted.
Yeah, plus he's not pumping. And see, again, it goes back to what you said about Alonso, that even when the package was not there, he was giving his very best, which I mentioned many times, half a second.
Of course.
Half a second, know. You know. I mean, I see what's going on. And that's not happening between Kazuki Nakajima and Rico Rosberg. And, you know, more bad news for him, the other talent that's coming through the pipeline, Bruno Senna, Romain Grosjean, and Sebastian Buemi. Buemi is very quick driver.
Who's
Nico Hülkenberg. Oh, yeah.
Nico better look over his shoulder because he's got the other Nico to look out
for. Oh, yeah. And his manager is Willy Weber. You know, a piranha and a shark all wrapped up in one wonderful body.
Yeah, and it's sad because I love Williams. Great team, great legacy, championships, and it's sad to see them languishing mid-pack. I mean,
absolutely.
They're not doing very well at all. See Toro Rosso and Red Bull outpace a team like Williams, it's got to be tough for Frank.
This has to be the best chance for Williams and also Toyota to do very well. Toyota as a power plant to Williams. I was thinking the other day, you know, talking about money that Toyota has spent on their Formula One program. Imagine if Matra had 20% of that money when they were in Formula One in the 60s and 70s, where they would be.
Huh, they would have landed on the moon first before the Americans.
You mean with the MS-120?
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, probably, yeah.
Very impressive, you have to admit. So anyway, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial. Of course, some goodies from Macau. Not Acau, but Macau. And of course, we have an interview with Jessica Branham. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Power, passion, and performance. If that's what you're after with your car, tune into the Castrol Syntech Unlock the Power podcast hosted by Funkmaster Flex at castrol.com/syntech. For those of you who are looking to maximize your car's performance, Flex will show you how to unlock the power of racing, motor oil, and cars and music. Castrol Syntech Motor Oil provides maximum horsepower for your engine. Have you unlocked all your car's power? Unlock the power at castrol.com/syntech.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, and of course, the king himself, the guru of motorsports, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Nasser, welcome back to the studio. I hope our cafeteria treated you well and the tea is nice and hot.
Tea is very nice and hot and has sugar also this time around. So double thanks to Monsieur Fab. Quality all the way. Anyway, greetings and racing regards to all the listeners from Guinea-Bissau to Macau. You think we have listeners in Guinea-Bissau or Burkina Faso?
Absolutely.
Somebody, some Belgian guy told me that Jackie Ick's wife, now new wife, is from Burkina Faso.
Well, I've seen pictures of her when she was young. Looks right to me.
Good. Okay, and Macau is where we start the edition, the annual Macau Grand Prix on the Juya Street Circuit. The origin of this race goes back to October 1954. Later we will look at some famous winners of this race. But first, fast forward to the 55th Macau Grand Prix, sponsored by Windsor Arch.
Big surprises in this race.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Surprise winner on his first trip to the island was Japanese driver Keisuke Kunimoto. Anytime you can win a race like this first time out, it's very, very impressive.
And people are saying this young man is very talented and is going to go far.
That's what they're saying. He led the race from start to finish, and he is a Toyota talent. You know, he's part of the Toyota Driver Development Program. And, of course, we wish him and everybody else all the best. Italian Eduardo Mortara was second, and Brendan Hartley of New Zealand. Now, talking of talent, this is very good talent, Brendan Hartley of New Zealand.
Of course, and you've spoken about him before.
Yeah, the rock and roll Tom Petty lookalike. He was third after starting from 20th on the grid. And this is a very, very tight circuit, much more tighter than
Monaco.
Yeah, exactly. Have you seen a race on TV or on YouTube?
An older vintage race, yes. Very, very nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. Mika Maki of Finlandia, now he was fourth. Now, this is a gentleman who was driving his Nissan, you know, at a very high speed in Finlandia some months ago and was in a big accident. So he was fourth. And both him and Hartley are part of Red Bull program, while race winner, like we said, Mr. Keisuke Kunimoto is part of the Toyota Driver Development Program. And if you are Japanese and part of the Toyota Driver Development Program, testing a Formula One Toyota car is only a phone call away.
Exactly.
World Touring Car Championship, also in Macau, in race one, Ivan Muller, driving a Seat, finished third and took the driver's title for 2008. Race was won by Alain Menu in a Chevrolet with the BMW of Andy Priol, second. In the second race, top three drivers dropped or crashed out on the last two laps, allowing Chevy driver Robert Huff to take the win. Muller was second and Priol third. And now we come to Clark Rogers' Le Grand favorite series.
Le NASCAR.
Hard to believe the season is over now in NASCAR.
Is it over for
yeah,
sure?
For
I
sure.
I mean, come on. And how many points does the winner end up with?
You sure,
the
you sure they don't have a couple exhibition races in the next couple weeks?
No, but they only have a small break, and then the Daytona 500 comes up in February. Three-peat for Jimmy Johnson. JJ has become the first driver since Cale Yarborough to win three NASCAR championships in a row in the Premier League. Jimmy Johnson drives for Rick Hendrick team, and they also employ number 24. NASCAR fans go by numbers. Number 24 is Jeff Gordon, and number 88, also known as Junior, Dale Earnhardt Jr., that is. Final race of the season took place in Homestead, Florida, and was won by cousin Carl Edwards, and he drives a Ford Fusion. Scott Speed was 16th, and Monty Juan Pablo Montoya 17th, and like I said, the 2009 NASCAR season starts in February at Daytona.
Now, where is Kyle Busch in this? Young talent?
Well, Kyle Busch won a lot of races, and when they got to the chase, in NASCAR language, his season just fell apart.
Yeah, basically they go two-thirds of the season, and then the last 10 races, they race for the cup.
Okay.
So he basically was in the chase and got into the chase where they picked, like, 10, 12 drivers?
Yeah, he was leading
and then
the chase.
He just went, okay. He had a couple of bad races and was
because
done.
He was supposed to be testing a Toyota Formula One car.
And you know what happened?
I heard that they gave him an ultimatum. You either show up at the banquet.
Actually, it's not even the NASCAR Grand Banquet in Waldorf Astoria. It's for the Nationwide Series.
Which is not as important, but still mandatory.
I guess so.
Because I heard you get points if you attend that.
Yeah, I think if you respond RSVP on that, you get 35 points.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Sponsor bonus.
Yeah.
And no points for testing a Formula One car, so obviously the choice is
Okay.
So
why would they
schedule them to test a Formula One car at the same time as the banquet?
Well, somebody missed a memo. Do you know what happened once some years ago? This was very, very embarrassing. There was a big Champ Car race. This was in the heyday. And you know this Mexican driver, Adrian Fernandez?
No, of course.
Yeah, he was racing there. And as soon as the race finished, they were going to get in a car, go to the airport, hop on a helicopter, which was going to take them to another event, sports car race or whatever it was. It was really tight, situation there time-wise. And his PR guy, I wonder what happened to him. He took him to the wrong airport.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was not a happy scene, that Adrian Fernandez could not come because he showed up at the wrong airport. But stranger things have happened.
Exactly, Nasser. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, we're trying to. BBC and Brundle. Martin Brundle, ex-Grand Prix driver, has confirmed he will be part of the BBC TV F1 team and may also have the company of DC, who may be like the expert commentator or...
Of course, David Coulthard is going to be part of the...
He'll be color.
But yeah, one of the color guys. Yeah. But I think this is going to be a great team.
Yeah, people in the UK are looking forward to this because there will be no adverts or commercials.
But a lot of people, including some very classy people, are saying it's going to be...
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly.
You know the chain?
Yeah. They're saying that it's going to be hard for them to top ITV. And I don't know. BBC's got good personnel, great facilities. I think it's going to be just as good.
And they have Her Majesty's blessing.
Jolly good.
Yeah. Oh, talking of jolly good, yeah. Our friend Peter Brazier sent me an email.
One of our best friends.
Yes, correcting me, saying that it's jolly old England, not jolly good.
Oh, really?
But, it may be jolly old for English people. For me, it's jolly good because if you have Silverstone, Brooklands, Donington Museum, Jackie Stewart, Jim Clark, I mean, it's jolly good.
Yeah, but what do we have?
We have you and Desiree.
Exactly my point.
And Steve Farm. Free refills on my tea.
Exactly. Bristol. So there you have it. And don't forget, we have good hot dogs.
Absolutely. No, I mean, when you talk of tracks in America, there is no shortage of very good racing facilities. The sad part is...
We have great tracks right here in our neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, Sears Point is a very... You've been there. It's a very nice track. Laguna Seca is incredible. I mean, you took a ride this time
around. I did get a ride.
Out of sheer jealousy, the host with the most.
Yes.
How was the feeling going up to Corkscrew?
Very exciting, and that's a blind left turn.
Exactly.
It's very exciting, and I was very impressed.
I was in a Lexus sedan, and there's a portion when you're going up, you see nothing but blue skies.
Blue skies. Unfortunately, I was in a Mazda. Zoom, zoom,
yeah.
Zoom. But still, very exciting.
Oh, you had one extra zoom, I'm counting.
And going around Laguna Seca was great, and the blind left as you come, and then all of a sudden you hit the corkscrew and you go down. And not only that, but it's a great roller coaster feeling.
And can you imagine going up there in a car that's just touching the ground at 150 miles per hour?
Negative G's would just be...
Incredible.
I call it machismo.
Yeah, and Road America is a very, very nice track.
Haven't been on that one.
Yeah, me too. Watkins Glen is pretty decent. I like Road... I've always liked Road Atlanta. And Mid-Ohio is pretty decent too.
Yeah. I'm going to stick with Dijon-Prenois for now. He's off! He's back again! That's incredible!
I like that. I was watching the other day, and he's like, he's off! He's off! He's back on!
Yeah. I have to YouTube that at least once a week.
Me too. That portion, and there is this portion which is also in the DVD Formula One on board, which shows Jackie Stewart and Francois Sever at the Nürburgring. Cars, up and down S's. That is like, man, I'll tell you, that thing.
The old Nürburgring, that was intense. It's like, and it just keeps going. It's like,
okay, we need to get back to motorsports.
Running out of time?
Yep.
Okay, IRL. Check this out. Reports are Ethanol is pulling the plug on their racing sponsorship and will no longer be the sugar daddy to Rahal Letterman Racing, making Ryan Hunter Ray, the young American driver, look for a ride elsewhere.
That's brutal.
It is, and to lose Rahal Letterman, that's very bad, and just might happen. Frank Montani, you and I met him briefly at Laguna Seca, has tested Andretti Green Car at Sebring and is one of several drivers on the outside looking in. Indy Lights, J.R. Hildebrand, gentleman we interviewed about a year and a half ago.
Correct.
20-year-old from Sausalito, which is next to San Francisco here in Northern Cali, will race in the series next year with Andretti Green Racing. And really, Green Racing is minting money as a team. But they do a very good job also.
Well, it's a little bit of a pull to have Andretti as part of your name.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, now we discussed this already a little bit, my two bits on F1 preseason. Lucas Di Grassi, Bruno Senna, Sebastian Bourdais, Sebastian Buemi, Sato, Pedro de la Rosa, all are chasing few open seats at Toro Rosso and Honda. Okay, and I just have a feeling that Grassi is a Renault development driver.
Correct.
And my feeling is, from what I've read, that he is at Honda because probably Briatore is trying to pimp him to Honda to put him in a seat. But it will be nice to see Bruno Senna in a Formula One car. I think if they have Bruno Senna and Button, they are set for the season. We don't know what the package is.
I agree. I think Degrassi is going to stay at Renault as a test driver, and I think we'll see Senna take Rubens Barrichello's place. Unfortunately, Rubinho didn't want to announce his retirement, and will just fade away like an old soldier.
Yeah, racing will retire him.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm sure he's got a couple of good books coming out.
We'll talk about that.
We will talk about that later.
We'll turn a few pages.
There you go.
Yeah. Both Barrichello and Bourdais may be filling out UB40 forms in December and feeling, I am a 1 in 10. Nobody knows me, but I'm always there. As it happens in life, no red wine for some. And a few words on that book. I don't know what that book will be called, but your take on that first. You're the host with the most.
Well, I think, I mean, a lot of us have been waiting for this book for a few years now. And Schumacher said it pretty eloquently a couple of days ago that a contract doesn't make you slower or quicker.
And I have to agree with
him. If you're quick, you'd be number one.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and pretty much, you know, the cage was rattled a long time ago. And Rubens Barrichello was a great number two. And anybody who, in those days, the Irvines, the Rubinhos, anybody who went to Ferrari when knowing that you were teaming up with Michael Schumacher knew what was ahead of them.
Well, you know, even if Michael Schumacher was at McLaren or Brabham Alfa Romeo,
exactly,
dishes would still be done for these drivers. That's why you don't want to go into a series where a super rising star. It's like, you know, I would not advise some kid who is in Formula 3 right now to go into GP2 and butt heads with Nico Hülkenberg. And probably Grosjean will be there in his second year.
Correct.
Because if these people are lapping half a second faster than you, and you're supposed to be very talented, then you are exposed.
There comes the end of your career.
Yeah, now, exactly.
Now, some of the rules have been enforced or changed because of some of the politics at Ferrari during the Rubinho post-2000 years of what happened on the podium. But, I mean, Schumacher always made himself number one because, first of all, he was fast.
That's where it ends.
And once he was fast, he was a smart man. His contractor dictated.
He had shrewd people around him.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's what it takes.
Exactly. Johnny Herbert, who was Schumacher's teammate at Benetton in 1995, qualified on the second row in fourth place, right behind Michael Schumacher. And on that day, he stopped getting any data from Schumacher's car.
So you read the F1 magazine.
Exactly! I've got the same copy!
Yeah, which just reached the U.S. shores.
Yes!
Yeah, it's interesting in Argentina.
It's very interesting stuff. And having interviewed Johnny Herbert, who really is a great guy, I'm sure he just laughed all of this off.
You know, I have, this is something, it's, I cannot prove it, but I don't know if Ross Brawn will tell me. But I read recently that, I don't know exactly, probably 93, 94, when traction control was not allowed, that Senna was standing at a corner in practice or qualifying of a race, and when Schumacher's car would go, he made a comment to the guy who was standing next to him, the engine would not make this sound unless you have a traction control on the car. And I know at one of the practice sessions they were busted with, you know, traction control embedded into the system. So I don't know how much cheating went there. But, you know, cheating, no cheating, contract, no contract. Because Schumacher was an ultra-quick driver.
I mean, of course, and Senna knew that, or he wouldn't have been paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just your career is over the moment you sign a contract and find out your teammate is Senna or Jim Clark or Schumacher. It's very hard to beat these guys.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think Rubens Barrichello does have a great story to tell. And I, you know, okay, I'll buy the book.
You will?
Yeah. Well, no, I'll borrow it from you.
Thank you. Well, this is how I look at it. Okay, you know, up until that Hungarian fiasco, okay, with McLaren team, up until that time, and you have to agree with me, Alonso had a very squeaky clean image for a world champion and a racing driver.
Very squeaky clean.
And I like that.
I mean, no
much.
Off the...
There was nothing there. He was not, you know, he was not seen with the, you know, stupid people. There was very... There was not
even
much
off
again.
The track, I mean, yeah, regular guy. Off,
he was a regular guy, just a simple, very talented driver. Rubens Barrichello, his career is over now. Sure, it's not as successful as Alonso, but he has so far it's been a very classy guy.
I agree completely.
I would hate to see his name tarnished by, you know, the comment that Schumacher made, who was his good friend, that the contract doesn't make you, you know, when you start throwing mud, what happened, the guy who has won 7 champions, when he says something, even if it's not correct, lot of people will believe him because your name is so big.
Yeah. I agree, and I think Schumacher felt cornered in having to say something, and I was surprised he even bothered, because he really doesn't have to. And I mean, I think he feels sorry for Rubinho. But anyway, enough of Rubinho, and I'm talking about the two-legged one, of course.
Yeah, he needs to grow 2 more. Okay, Lewis Hamilton will demonstrate his championship-winning McLaren at the Race of Champions at Wembley Stadium next month, which should be interesting. A1GP will be in action this weekend at Sepang in Malaysia. Marco Andretti will be driving the Team Daddy entry. That's what I'm calling the U.S. team. Instead of Team USA, Team Daddy.
That's good.
Yeah. For the rest of the season, as Go Daddy Girl, I've read somewhere, Miss Danica Patrick wanted more money for show.
I read that, and I really hope it's not true. I hope she's into this for racing and not for the money.
Well, she knows she can't win, so she may as well squeeze every penny out of it.
Yeah, but, I mean, she can go pose for Playboy and make money.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, and the other thing, too, is A1GP, you're not racing for Andretti Green. You're racing for, you know, it's
for
like...
USA.
Yeah, it's like racing in the Olympics.
Do you need more? I mean, that's a great thing to do.
You said pose for Playboy. I was so busy reading the articles. Which issue was she in?
No issues.
Not yet. Well, when she loses her ride... I'll bet you 6 months later.
Exactly, but we'll see. I'm hoping to see.
Apparently, there are some issues, trouble in paradise at Andretti Green. This is according to Robin Miller's column on SpeedTV.com that she and her Pepita were seen at the nationwide race. And with all due respect, I know people don't want me to say this. She's not going to become a winning driver in IndyCar racing.
She's not going to become a winning driver.
Yeah.
All right, Nasser.
Yeah, it's so. Might as well milk Elsie as much as you can.
I know, but I think she should at least do some A1GP races just for her own career, her memories, travel, experience, you know, get a little more under her brassiere.
Oh, wow. If she has one.
And, of course, you're going to mention Team Germany coming back.
Team Germania, Deutschland über alles, no longer has Willy Weber as franchise holder. You know, he was a little pissed off at A1GP because they had not paid him.
They hadn't paid Nico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that issue has been resolved, but the team has a new owner, and there was some delays with the new car, powered by Ferrari car. So the team will appear for the first time in New Zealand. And Mr. Michael Emmer-Müller, this is another name that is just like unbelievable. I think he won his very first GP2 race. He was on a fast track, and now he's just now crashing into people in A1GP. So very sad to see.
Not all of us can succeed, Nasser.
Yeah, and he had a situation. He was also hurt in one of the races, and that really I feel bad for him because he was very quick.
Well, let's hope he can turn things around.
Yes, sir. Okay, Bernie Ecclestone gets sayonara from Canada and Slovakia. Canadian authorities are pissed off, and who can blame them, that F1 Czar did not work with them and would not budge from a reported $35 million sanctioning fee. And you know what? I'm reading that Abu Dhabi and these new places, Singapore, they are paying $50 million just as a sanction fee. Plus, you have to put up the facility and all that kind of stuff. Okay, but on a more personal note, Bernie's wife has moved out from their house. Apparently, she also could not meet his demands of 10% more each year.
Yeah, well, wait till she owns 30, you know, well, owns like 75% of everything he has.
Well, it, because of a, Bernie's a pretty smart individual, and for tax shelter reasons, a lot of his stuff is in her name. So when she
she's not the right person to piss off.
Well, she's a big girl, too. I like her.
Oh, yeah.
I find her very attractive.
I thought you liked their daughters also.
All of them. I'm,
You're French.
Okay.
Exactly.
Next.
Okay, so that's anything else anybody would like to discuss before we go into a historical goodie bag?
Okay, historical goodie bags are good. I'm pretty much done with Formula One for today. Steve, any thoughts on Barcelona and testing?
No, not much. It's good to see it. It's fun to have cars back on the track. It kind of eases the pain of the off season, but no real big jump out at you and knock you off your feet kind of performances.
I agree. And, of course, the big stars aren't there, like the Raikkonens and the Fernandos. So we'll see what happens in December when they go back to España. I think we will see some of the bigger stars, including Lewis Hamilton, who is, of course, on holiday.
Holiday with Pussycat Doll?
Yeah. Could you imagine?
Tough life.
I know. Everybody's suffering over here. But I think we'll see more of the new cars, which is really what I'm interested in. And I think Fernando doesn't really want to get into, R28B/C. He wants to get into the new car and start testing.
Wants to get into
the R29. Yeah, this kinetic energy recovery system. So there you have it. And now, the goodie bag.
The goodie bag, sir, is about the Macau Grand Prix. And before we get into more into this, just a reminder that the A1 GP race coming this weekend can be watched live free of charge on their website, www.a1gp.com. And I believe the Baja 1000 is also this weekend. So there's still a lot of
there's some good sports. Stuff. And let's quickly, since you brought this up, Speed will now carry the A1 GP races. Unfortunately, it's with a two-month delay.
That's still really? Quick for them.
But the, yeah, but starting December 5th, we'll get the first race of the A1 GP season.
At 3 in the morning?
At 3 in the morning.
Great.
On December 5th on the Speed Channel. And I think that's great.
Yeah. Okay, history of the Macau Grand Prix. As mentioned, the first running took place in 1954. Winner of the race was Eddie Carvalho in a Triumph TR2. In 1958, the circuit was modified to its current configuration, which is 3.8 miles in length. In 1960, the event was sanctioned by FIA for the first time as a national race with foreign participation. Winner was Martin Redfern of Scotland in his Jaguar XKSS over the Porsche Spyder of American driver Grant Wolfgill. Arsenio Laurel, also known as Dodgy of the Philippines, won the race in 1962 in a Lotus 22. He also won the following year to become the first double winner in Macau. And his dad, at one time, was president of Philippines in the 1940s, briefly. In 1966, race was won by a Belgian driver of Italian descent, Mauro Bianchi. Mauro Bianchi. I met this gentleman in April this year at Mugello. His brother was Le Mans winner Lucien Bianchi. And this past weekend, his grandson, Jules Bianchi, raced in Macau. And he's an up-and-coming, very good racing talent. Mm. And the family was originally from Italy, moved to Belgium. And Jules is now based in near Marseille. So he's like you, Francais. 1967, motorcycles raced in Macau for the first time. Have you ever been to Hong Kong, Macau, Philippines, and South Asia?
No, I haven't, sir.
Or the Orient? No, seriously.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
Well, are you going?
Well, I would like to see different parts of the world.
Me too.
And motor racing. Macau Grand Prix, to me, is like Po or Le Mans. It has to be seen once in a lifetime.
I agree. And we'll go together, Nasser.
Ooh, what about Steve?
Together again.
There you go. Okay, 1967, motorcycles raced in Macau for the first time. Winner was Hiroshi Hasegawa of Japan on a Yamaha. Sadly, in the race on four wheels, the double winner, Arsenio Laurel, also known as Dodgy, was killed when his Lotus 41 crashed and caught fire. 1969 was a special year for John McDonnell as he became the John Surtees of Macau in reverse fashion. In 1965, he won the Macau Grand Prix on four wheels and in 1969, won on two wheels riding a Yamaha, only man to achieve this feat on the island. Australian Vern Schuffen won the race in 1974, driving a March 722. And you know the numbering on March cars? You know what 722 means?
No, I don't.
72, the first two digits signify the year.
Okay.
And the third one signifies the series. So 711 was a 71 March for Formula 1. So 722 is 72 car for Formula 2.
So yeah. Sophisticated.
Max was always smart.
I know.
Max Mosley. Okay, second four laps down that year was David Purley. And some of our listeners probably remember Vern Schuffen from his Formula 1 days, pre-Formula 1 days. He also finished second in the very first Long Beach Grand Prix in 1975, which was a Formula 5000 event. And David Purley is the driver who tried to save Roger Williamson from his burning machine in the tragedy that was the Dutch Grand Prix, 1973. And Purley himself lost his life in the crash of his stunt plane in England in 1985. Schuffen won the race again in 1976. Star of the show was another Australian, Alan Jones. His track record at this event stood for 8 years. And Jones, of course, was the first Williams driver to become world champion in 1980. Ricardo Patrese won the race in 1977 and later would also drive for Williams and other Formula One teams. And his video that is available on YouTube with his wife driving in a Honda Civic is a very...
It's hilarious.
It's hilarious. Folks, if you have not seen it, check it out. Where was it? In Jerez? Somewhere in Spain, right?
I thought they were in Italy.
No, I thought...
No, they were in France. Wasn't it Paul Ricard?
It was somewhere, I think Spain or France, they were doing something. He was invited by Honda Formula
Correct.
One team.
No, it was very hilarious.
He's driving,
very
it's very, very interesting.
Nice wife.
Oh, yeah. When was the last time you saw a Formula One driver with an ugly wife?
Okay, well, let me Google that.
Yeah, okay. 1978, this was the 25th anniversary of the event. A special race of giants was organized, which saw names like Jack Brabham, Dan Gurney, Jackie Stewart, Phil Hill, Jackie Ickx, Stirling Moss, and I believe Bobby Unser was also in this race. Winner was ex-Ferrari F1 driver from Belgium, Jackie Ickx, multiple winner at Le Mans, obviously. The Grand Prix itself was won for the second year in a row by Ricardo Patrese, ahead of Derek Daly, man who once worked in Australian mines to stay in racing. That's an incredible story.
I know, I love it.
Yeah. He was second, and Daly was second, and third was Kevin Cogan from Southern California. Cogan looked like a hero in the early 80s, but two events in the Indy 500 were not kind to his racing career. The slight start line schmazzle in 1982, in which he took out Andretti and A.J. Foyt, and the late race pass by Bobby Rahal to win the Indy 500 in 1986, I believe it was. He was leading. He had a very good chance to win. He had Bobby Rahal covered, and I think it was Ari Leeuwendijk who spun out, caused a yellow, and then at the restart, Rahal rattled his cage. California native Bob Earl became the first and so far the only American to win in Macau. This was in 1981. The motorcycle race was won by a very familiar name now, Ron Haslam. The 1982 race was won by Brazilian Roberto Moreno, and the following year it was his countryman who would leave his mark in Macau and motor racing. The 1983 race was the first running for Formula 3 cars after the FIA had declared the circuit unfit for Formula 2 machinery. The 30th Macau Grand Prix in 1983 was won by Ayrton Senna. Second was Roberto Guerrero, who raced both in Formula 1 and Indy cars. And third was Austrian, who would later become Senna's teammate and is today part owner of Toro Rosso and also a friend of Scott Speed, namely Gerhard Berger. You know, interesting thing happened after this race. By mistake, award for the fastest lap was given to Berger instead of Senna. And recently, I think it's on their website, which I put on the forum also. If you read this, Senna came up to Berger and said, "Hey, you know, I want my trophy." And Berger said, "No, it was given to me, it's mine." And then they later had their first beer in Macau. So, very neat, a neat story there. 1984, John Nielsen became the first Danish driver to win this race. Mauricio Gugelmin won in 1985, and he also had a career both in Formula One and Champ Cars. Gugelmin and Senna shared an apartment in England in days before fame and fortune. Small world, man, I'm telling you. In 1988, the motorcycle event was won by American rider Kevin Schwantz. The Grand Prix was won by Enrico Bartaggio with R. Damon Hill second. a controversial collision in 1990, which is also available on YouTube, sidelined Mika Hakkinen with victory going to Michael Schumacher. And the race, you know, is run in two heats. Hakkinen won the second heat, and then there was this collision with Michael Schumacher. Funny, both Macau and Adelaide are street circuits and share similar history when their commissar is in town. Yeah. DC was the winner in 1991. Jacques Villeneuve was third in the 1992 race, which was won by Rickard Rydell of Sweden. Schumacher name returned to the winner's circle in 1995, this time Ralphie doing the winning over Jarno Trulli and our man of the moment, Pedro de la Rosa, third. Darren Manning from UK won in Macau in 1999, and Jenson Button was second. Sato Sam won the race in 2001. Nicolas Lapierre, who raced in GP2 and A1GP for Team Viva la France a few years back, was the winner in 2003. His countryman and fellow GP2 and A1GP teammate, Alexander Prema, was the winner in 2004. In a thrilling finish, Lucas Di Grassi, now trying to get a ride in Formula 1, made a late race pass to grab the lead and win in 2005 from Robert Kubica. A young German who is still young was third, the talented and soon to rattle many cages, Herr Sebastian Vettel. And you know, as you can see, Darren Manning winning a big race over Button, Grassi beating Kubica. I mean, there's always these stories, you know. Oh, I used to beat Schumacher. Oh, I used to beat Senna. I used to beat Prost.
That's I used to beat Alonso.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. And Desiree used to lap Danica.
I know.
Okay, now we come to famous last words. Now, you know, I'm grasping, looking for news now. If we cannot get motorsports, we'll at least try to bring motoring news. You
something.
Know.
I mean,
we're not going to talk about, you know, curling or cricket here.
Well, a curling update would be nice.
Okay. Okay, this is famous last words. As we all know by now, CEOs of U.S. automakers are in D.C. on Professor Carl Sagan program asking for billions and billions for the bailout. You know what's going on there, right?
I do know what's going okay. on. My tax dollars.
At work on the back of a Chevy pickup soon. Turns out all flew in on private jets, which led Representative Gary Ackerman of New York to remark, and I quote, "It's almost like seeing a guy show up at the soup kitchen in high hat and tuxedo," end of quote.
Which is a good quote. I mean, the whole thing is just ridiculous, and it's insulting to my intelligence.
A lot of jobs are riding on this, so something needs to be done. But I got to tell you something, you know, I'm no Jimmy, second coming of Jimmy Hoffa. But, you know, when I hear these things, they say, oh, the labor union, they're always blaming the labor union for all problems, or most of the problems. And I remember in the early 1990s when IBM was having a meltdown, just like GM is having now.
I remember.
They were talking about splitting the company, it's just going to go out of business. And they laid off a lot of people, shut down a lot of factories. I'll never forget reading in this business magazine, they said that through all this turmoil, IBM did not shut down or close any of their executive golf courses. So if you look at the perks of these people at the top, you know, can you imagine coming to D.C.? I mean, at least put on a show that I came, you know, coach
class. Take the train.
I don't know what to say.
I mean, even I would never bring, the F1 Weekly limo if I'm going to, like, just a karting race or something.
You mean the radio flyer limo?
Exactly.
With three F1 Weekly stay. Let me tell you my...
With him sitting and being pulled by you and me.
Yeah, exactly. And with Desiree, you know, doing the whipping.
Yeah, exactly.
Whip it real good. I was at a software company some years ago, a small company. We hired this head honcho from Oracle, young guy, and he brought his own cronies. And some of them were very nice. Some of them were like, you know, you don't want to deal with them. But that happens, you know. And one day he gets, you know, all come to Jesus meeting. We are all in this room, small company, maybe 100 people. And he's delivering his message that, you know, right after this at 4:30, I'm going to the airport, San Jose Airport, which is like, how far is it from Great America Parkway? No more than 4 miles, right?
Correct.
And he's going to visit 13 countries in Europe and Australia, Japan, everywhere. 13 countries in like 9 days. And everybody's going to get a 15% pay cut, which they did. Meeting ends, we walk out. I kid you not, what's parked outside to take him 4 miles. Not a limo, but a stretch limo. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, you only live once, Nasser. That's what we say here. Yeah.
I'm going to go travel the world, and I'm going to go to the airport in a limo. And stretch. By the way,
Steve,
your paycheck's going to be smaller next week.
Yeah, and it was a stretch limo, I kid you not.
Well, good for him.
Well, maybe it was all that was available, Nass.
Oh, yeah. And you know what the company said? They travel by private jets because of safety and, you know, those issues.
Of course, and anybody be kidnapped by Colombian warlords.
Well, more often than not, it has more to do with convenience than it does anything else.
But, no, it's more, of course, convenience and time-saving. But to bring up the safety issue, the safest form of air travel is commercial jetliner.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at the data.
Well, just look at the news over the last 3 years. How many more people have been killed in private jet crashes than have been...
Yeah, but guys...
Crazy. I'm thinking crazy.
Crazy for thinking about you. Okay, thank you, Nasser. Another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And now...
Call for tea reheat, please.
We'll take a quick break for tea, and we'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And, of course, now the interview of the week. A new upcoming young driverette by the name of Jessica Branham. Nass, please introduce this new fantastic talent.
Okay, Jessica Branham is a young lady from McHenry, Illinois. Her website is www.jessicabranham.com. And last name is spelled B-R-A-N-N-A-M. Some of her accomplishments in karting include 16 national championships, 14 regional championships, and 178 feature race victories, which is very impressive. Currently, she is planning a program in Formula Star Mazda in 2009. This conversation took place at Laguna Seca last month during the American Le Mans race. My thanks to her and all for her time, and also to her mom, Diane, for arranging this interview at a very short notice. Thank you, ladies, and all the best for 2009 and beyond.
Jessica, thank you for joining F1Weekly.com.
Okay, I'm here at Laguna Seca with Miss Jessica Branham. Jessica, first of all, welcome to Laguna Seca and F1 Weekly. How are you, and what do you like here today?
I'm Jessica. I am here just seeing what's going on and enjoying myself.
Is this your first trip to Laguna Seca?
Yeah, it is. This is my first trip to California, actually. I'm used to going towards Chicago, so this is very different for me.
You have a great date of birth, December 25th, and what I like is on your website, you have a very interesting motto. Can you please tell our listeners what that is?
I might be small, but I can haul, and that's very true.
And what do you plan to haul next season? Tell us about your big plans, please.
My plan for now is to run the Formula Mazda series in Stars and Stripes team. They're a new team. We're getting started, and we're working together to find some sponsorship. So we'll see what happens.
You started in karting at the age of 10. What led to your interest in motor racing? Is there interest in the family?
Oh, yeah. I race against my grandpa sometimes, my uncle. So I've been around it my whole life. My dad got out of it the year I started, so it's a definite family thing.
Now, this information is from your website. You have been very successful in karting with 16 national championships, 14 regional championships, and a whopping 178 feature race victories. What is the secret of this amazing run of success? Is it all down to driver or a lot of good people around you?
I think it's a lot with my dad. He really helped me. I mean, of course, when I'm out there, I make the final decision of what pass to make and when to make it, but without that good equipment, I would not be where I am today. So he's a definite part in all those winnings.
What is the most important somebody can teach you who is not driving the car with you?
I don't know. They can just teach me. I mean, my dad, he has personal experience. So if they have personal experience, they can teach you, you know, how to drive it, you know, and what line and where to brake. So that's just an outsider standpoint of what they can do for me.
Do you feel extra good because winning these days is actually beating a lot of boys?
Oh, yeah. I've had, like, hardly any friends from all, you know, from racing because they'd get jealous. There's a definite jealousy thing from beating a girl to beating a guy. I mean, it's way different. But I like it. I get some great feedback from a lot of the team owners from it, so.
But do the guys respect you as a person and a driver, or do you feel some of them carry a grudge also?
Well, a lot of them when you're younger carry a really big grudge, but as you get older, they kind of just say congratulations, and so it gets better when you get older, I like to believe.
What races and victories are most important to you?
That's a good question. I think the first ones are always the most memorable. In mini sprints, it took me a while to get that, you know, that next level and do good, and it was just a great feeling, and I will never forget that.
You've already answered my next question, which was about biggest influence, guiding light in your career. But now that you're getting into some serious motor racing, is there somebody else apart from your family member who is guiding your career?
I have a lot of people that I race with that are older that help me personally. I mean, there's so many people to name, but I mean, my grandpa, he works on my cars in the mini sprint a lot, and he helps me in any way because he's been doing this for a very long time. But just older people that have influenced me and helped me. So no specific person, really.
You have raced on dirt track. This, I thought, was very interesting. You have raced on dirt tracks, ovals, and road courses. What type of racing you prefer, and how hard is the adjustment racing from one type of track to another?
Dirt racing is so different. The driving line is different every single lap, so it's never boring, ever. You know, it's very close racing and very small oval tracks, but transition is it's tough at first. It's very tough, but you'll learn to gradually work your way into dirt to asphalt, and you switch a lot, so it's different.
Road Atlanta is your favorite track, and Janet Guthrie, your favorite racer. Please tell us more about these choices.
Janet Guthrie's just been around for a very long time. She's done very good. I read her book, and I met her, and she's just a fantastic racer that's put us women into this whole field of racing. So I think that's great. And Road Atlanta, I love it. I love the racing transitions, and I like the track itself. It's very nice. The, you know, the area around it is great.
Have you raced at Road America? And if you have, how do you compare that to Road Atlanta?
Road America is my home track, actually, so I've raced there many times in a go-kart and other stuff. I did Skip Barber there. It's a nice track. It's a very long track, so it gets kind of boring at times, but it's definitely fun. I've just overused that track a lot. So.
Okay, this next question was not in the script, but you mentioned us, you know, ladies in racing. In the recent catfight between Milka Duno and Danica Patrick, whose side were you on?
I don't think I'm going to take a side on that one. I mean, I just thought that was... I didn't really think that was very good. I mean, racers, you know, I just think that us girls should stick together and they shouldn't fight. I mean, yeah, I understand what happened on the track. That was bad, but, you know, just talk about it. You know, try and figure it out because we need to stick together. That's what it's all about right now.
Okay, on YouTube, there is a very nice Jessica Branham sponsorship commercial. Right now, we are in tough times worldwide financially, but how has been the response from potential sponsors?
We've had people look at that before, and, you know, it's tough. It's tough trying to get any sponsor. I have great sponsors right now, you know, with Impact and Redline and all those, Dunlop, you know, but it's tough. It's very tough, you know, for me, even as a woman driver, it's just as hard. So we're getting there.
Now, you were in the Red Bull semifinal, made it to the semifinals twice. Have they shown some interest in you, or did you try to get something from them?
We did that, and we walked away with it with some good experiences and some bad experiences. We haven't really gotten into the whole Red Bull scene, but, you know, it was just a good experience. That's about all.
What was the bad experience?
You know, just different people, different, you know, different crashes. It was just, you know, you're always going to have bad experiences, so.
Okay, in August, you were honored for the third year in a row as one of the top women in all of motorsports by the Lynn St. James Foundation. Do you feel in this day and age being a female in motor racing is an advantage? Obviously, it was not the case when Janet was trying to, you know, break through the glass ceiling. What do you think about these days?
You know, I don't think we're at as much of an advantage. I think, you know, having Danica Patrick winning and doing so good, I think that's a big stepping stone for all of us women. But I think personally, you know, I need to go out there and show what I can do. And I hope that will be a big stepping stone for women racers, too.
talking of Danica, have you sought any advice from her or Catherine Legg or some other ladies?
I have never met Danica, but I have gotten, you know, a lot of women's influences, like Lynn St. James. I've been to her school, you know, and a lot of other women drivers, and it's helped, definitely.
What are your expectations and goals for 2009 in the Formula Mazda series?
My goal is to be in the series as of right now. Getting the funding is very tough, but I hope to go out there and show all these boys what I have and, you know, introduce myself to this whole new level of racing.
Now, these are 250 horsepower racing cars. Do you have an extensive preseason testing agenda?
You know, like I said, as of right now, we need the funding to go testing. So none so far, but hopefully we'll really kick it into gear when we get that sponsorship.
What is the ultimate goal, IndyCars, NASCAR, or Formula Uno?
Formula One, definitely. That's my dream. That's been my dream since, like, you know, I turned 10. And so that's where I want to be. Although I'm a long ways away, hopefully I'll get there.
Who would you like to see win the championship this year, Hamilton or Massa?
Hamilton. I think so.
Apart from being a race car driver, what can you tell our listeners about yourself? Well, what kind of music you like? Anything you want to say to people?
Well, I'm a girl. I love to shop. I love to, you know, do all the pampering, get my nails done. You know, I like to, you know, come to the track and be the best looking person there. You know, and show off, you know, my racing talent. And you know, I like the reading and looking up, you know, different things about racing. So,
what is the best thing you like about racing?
I just like the atmosphere. I like the smell. I like, you know, I like the people that you meet. So many different people from so many different countries. And, you know, you just meet so many nice people.
Like me?
Exactly.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? We have a worldwide audience. And also, please let them know your web address.
My web address is jessicabrandom.com. Please check it out. It's great. You know what? All I got to say is, you know, get my name out there, you know, and hopefully you'll see me next year in the Mazda series.
Well, we certainly hope so. We wish you all the best, and we'll keep a track on what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now let's go right into the wrap-up, and of course, Steve has our forum updates.
Forum updates provided by Yay. Thanks, Yay. This week's news from the F1 Weekly Forum. The 2008 Drivers' Hurt and Heel Championship saw Sebastian Vettel voted best driver with 11 points. Second was Fernando Alonso on 8, and in a tie for third, all on 6 points, were Robert Kubica, Nick Heidfeld, Timo Glock, and Rubens Barrichello. David Coulthard was last with a single point, but we did not lose Massa, Raikkonen, Piquet, Bourdais, and Sutil along the way. In the 2008 Team Hurt and Heel Championships, Toro Rosso was voted best team with 14 points and the Renault on 12 and BMW on 10. Unsurprisingly, Honda came in last with just 4 points. Our new member this week, who has posted, is Leadfoot. And I'd like to mention Awatkanian, who posted this week for the first time, despite being a member of the forum since the day it was created over 2 years ago. Way to go, dude. Right now, the forum's hottest discussion topics include 209 cars, medals instead of points, attempts to reinstate Canada fail, Kimi, at times my motivation was lacking, and will Sato get the Toro Rosso seat? If you want to make a comment about something or ask a question, please come and visit us on the forum. No excuses for a sing-song, as there are no birthdays this week, and in fact there are none showing on the calendar for the whole month of December. So I suspect people are not filling in their birthday dates, which is a shame. That's all for now. Keep up the posting, everybody. Thanks, Jake.
Thank you, Stephen, and keep up the good work. All right, quickly, I've got some results from the 2008 Jim Russell Northern California Road Tax Challenge. And I'm just going to shout these out because these people deserve my time. In the junior Rotax category, Jordan Jadala is champion, second place Donovan Wheeler, and third place Mr. Brody Zink. In the senior Rotax category, Gregory Laifui, champion, and forgive me if I mispronounce your names, just email me and we'll take care of it. Nikola Radosavinic in second place, and Matthew Powers in third place. In the Rotax Masters, we have David Carlisle is our champion. Jerry Preti is second, and Jay Brosius third. And of course, the Rotax Masters Lite, we have Mac Lawler, our champion, Mark Pijol, second place, and Mary Beth Wilson takes third on the podium. And for our Rotax Double D2, it's David Arnstein is in first, January Grove in second, and Glenn Poy Wing in third place. So congratulations to everyone who participates in the Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Challenge. So real quickly, Motorsports Memories 2009 powered by Turbo calendar is going faster than anybody could possibly expect, almost like a turbo-powered Formula One car. $1,595 plus shipping and handling. Don't forget your mom this coming up Christmas holiday.
Don't forget Dad either.
Dad occasionally likes motorsports.
Brothers and sisters. Everybody, aunts and uncles.
And, of course, Auntie Mame. So there you have it. Just go to the merchandise page and click on it because you know you want to.
And I don't know an acquaintance that wouldn't like to have one, too.
Exactly, Steve. Keep up the good work and the open mind. I also want to send a quick update on the Rotax Challenge. The World Finals will be at La Conca in southern Italy, which is a place that NASCAR is very, very familiar with. And the racing starts next Thursday, November 27th. There are 13 U.S. drivers going. 55 countries send teams. So it's one of the biggest karting events in the world. So it's great stuff. I'm glad that the Northern California guys and gals are going down there to participate. Now, any comments on this fantastic end of the season championship?
Well, I'm very happy for our friend Adrian Schwartzberg to be going there with his wife. So hopefully he'll bring back some stories and pictures. And I think, did he send us a website also where you can follow this?
There is a website. Just go to our links page and click on the Marin Karting or the Rotax link, and that'll take you to where you need to go to get all the updates of what's going on next week in La Conca, Italia. Ciao!
Ciao, anyway. Ciao.
Ciao, bella.
Real quickly, I want to mention our MySpace and Facebook sites. I know this is very complicated stuff, Nas.
What happened to Twitter?
So anyway, check us out. Just search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens. Please send your emails because now we have time. Since it's post-season, we'll read your email on the air. If you got some criticism, things we should be doing next year that we didn't do this year. And, of course, you know, do you like NASCAR better than me?
Everybody loves you.
Exactly.
Do you have leads on sponsorship?
We need
take us out to lunch, like you said on the video.
Exactly. Yeah, so, great. No, I want to thank also everybody that makes this show possible. David Tapia, Toby Dawes, Desiree, Nasser Hamid, and of course Steve Faub, who's always doing an outstanding job. We'll see you next week right here at F1Weekly.com. Good night.
Good night.
Sayonara.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport. A blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.